Welcome to today's episode of Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. We're going to get right into an interview, which is great, with Tracy Conan, where we talk about protecting your money during divorce. There's a lot of great things we cover. We talk about the idea of one person managing the money and one person maybe not having as much of control over the money and how that's natural. We also talk about how to make sure that both spouses are on the same page. Should you have separate bank accounts? Should everything be joined in one account? That's also something we're going to cover. We're also going to look at what do you do when you're going through the divorce? How do you handle that with your personal finances? And how do you prevent a divorce or money coming in the way of your marriage? There's a lot of great things to get to. And of course, you can find Tracy's information in the show notes or at fraudcoach.com. But the money talking points for today's episode are: which strategies can I/we implement to prevent against divorce or fights over money? And then two, if you're not in a long-term relationship, what is your key takeaway to help prevent financial turmoil? With all that in mind, let's get right into today's episode. You know, we don't talk about money enough. It's a topic that gets ignored for some reason, even though it plays a role in everyone's day-to-day life. Well, this issue is what brought Money Talk with Skylar Fleming to reality. I know you're probably busy and don't have time to research and learn about all the things that go into personal finance, but that's where this podcast, Money Talk, comes into play. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming, and I'm here to do the research and learn all the extra stuff about personal finance for you. The goal is to simply get us talking about money. So let's get talking. Welcome back to another interview. I have Tracy, I believe it's pronounced Conan, on with me today. We're going to talk about protecting your money during divorce. And Tracy, do you want to introduce yourself real quick?
I sure do. It is Tracy Conan, and I'm a forensic accountant. And what that means is I find money. So I'm a fraud investigator, and I do a lot of work in the corporate realm with companies that have executives stealing from them, any kind of money shenanigans. And part of the work that I do relates to people getting divorced and trying to figure out where the money has gone. So I spend a lot of time tracing money through bank accounts, looking at lots and lots of transactions, looking at credit card statements, the bank statements, the investment statements, and really trying to figure out exactly what has happened to a family's money and where that money has gone.
Sounds like then you've probably seen some pretty crazy stories and some pretty wild places money's gone and things like that, I'd imagine.
You know, not every case has unusual stories or exciting stories. I, of course, have some of those. In many of the cases that I work on, it really is simply a matter of one of the parties to the divorce needs to know what's happened to the money. And it might not be anything inappropriate at all. They just need to know, what did we spend our money on? How much money was it? Is all of our income accounted for? Was there any money that, you know, kind of disappeared? And in some cases, there isn't anything that disappeared. I find it's run of the mill. Everything checks out. But the peace of mind that people get when I do that work is really important when they're getting divorced.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be, especially for someone, like generally, I would say in relationships, there's one person who's the main financial person. And even though both might be involved in financial decisions, one person has a little bit more of a handle on it. And like you said, the peace of mind that I'm sure your work can bring to the person who maybe isn't the financially savvy one. But let's dive right here into the first question. What's the number one thing that causes people's like a headache surrounding money and divorce?
Well, it's exactly what you mentioned. Typically in married couples, there is one spouse who has the primary responsibility for the money. And most of the times it's for no reason other than that's just how they've divided the duties in their family. You know, we divide duties with the kids, who drops them off at school, who picks them up. Someone mows the lawn while someone else is responsible for doing the grocery shopping. It's just division of duties. And so most of the time, one spouse taking care of the money isn't for a nefarious reason. But when it comes time for divorce, that autonomy of the one spouse does cause a lot of headaches because the spouse who hasn't been involved says, I don't know what's been going on. Maybe they're suspicious. Maybe they're not. I'll tell you, when divorce happens, people aren't getting along. And so it is more likely that someone will be suspicious. But even if they don't suspect fraud, the fact of the matter is, they are in a position of needing information. They often don't know where to start.
Yeah. So like, I think just simple confusion comes about it is like the first thing that comes to my mind. Like I'm generally the person in my wife and I's relationship that handles the money. And we both place a lot of trust in each other with that. But I can just imagine from her perspective, if anything was to go awry, like it would just be generally concerning because even though she can get into the accounts, I can like do all the stuff faster because I have all the access, which like you said, may or may not be suspicious, but if there is any sort of suspicion, I bet it just heightens and like exponentially makes things like trickier and harder.
Right. And you know where all the accounts are. You probably have a general idea of how much is in this account or that account. You know what bills are paid out of which account or when money needs to be transferred. And so to be the spouse who doesn't know those things can place you in a really uncomfortable position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you lose a lot of control that you didn't need. And then suddenly when you feel that you need it or you don't have it, then I'm sure it feels extremely stressful. But how can let's say the couples that are going through and things are good, how do you protect yourself in the event of a divorce while they're setting everything up? So let's say you're just getting started, you're setting up your financial life and your foundation. How do you protect yourself if a divorce does happen later down the road?
I certainly talk with people who are getting ready to be married or join households and join finances. And I always emphasize that having access to information is one of the best ways to protect yourself. So even if your spouse is going to primarily manage the money and be in charge of it, for you to have access to the accounts, for you to take a routine, regular look at what's going on in the accounts is really, really important. So I tell the spouse who isn't in charge of the money that they should plan on looking at the bank statements at the end of every month, look at the credit card statements. And it really doesn't have to be much more than glancing over them, seeing what the money was spent on, maybe asking a couple of good questions. But when your spouse who's handling the money knows that you are looking at the statements, taking an interest in the information, it's less likely that something can go wrong.
Yeah. And I would think too, if things, I guess, do go down the wrong direction and a divorce is imminent, I would think that knowing that both people have access to it, it's going to steer away the possibility of the person who handles the money doing something crazy with it. Like they're going to be more aware and I guess sensitive to the other person's feelings because they're like, they know they can see what's going on, which I guess it's a little bit of accountability in my mind.
It is accountability, and that's really important. The other way that I suggest that they protect themselves is through communication. And there's two really critical times to communicate. The first time is before you do join the finances. And it's talking about how much do we spend on things? What are our expectations? How are we going to manage the money? I don't care if couples decide to completely integrate their finances or keep them completely separate or do something in the middle. It really doesn't matter because none of those ways is right or wrong. It's just what you choose. But you have to be really communicative about what you're doing. So a great example I have is, Skylar, if your wife is really enjoys getting her nails done on a routine basis. She likes to go to the nail salon every couple of weeks. And you've never had any knowledge about that before, the first question is, how much does that cost? And you might say, oh my gosh, I had no idea. That's really expensive. Our budget can't handle that. By her communicating how much it costs and how often she goes, you now have an opportunity to have the discussion and make a decision about that. Is it something that maybe you'd be okay with her going once a month rather than twice? Or is it a situation where she says, hey, you've got a really expensive hobby that costs just about the same as me going twice a month. Is that a fair trade-off? So the communication is so important. And then once you do join the finances, I tell people to have routine conversations about the money. And what I'm a fan of is one conversation a week of 5 to 10 minutes. It's not such a big deal. If it's a short conversation that happens regularly, not such a big deal. If it's 1 hour long conversation once a month or every other month, now all of a sudden there's anxiety. It's a really big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's dive into that topic just around communicating around money, because I think it's a very important one. I like a lot what you said about talking before you join things. And one of the thoughts I had around the hobby situation where one person has a hobby that's maybe shockingly expensive to the other one. Something that I think that conversation allows you to have is you can say, oh, you're right. I do, like, both people come to realize, and when they're on an equal playing ground and maybe a little bit calmer in their emotions, because if you're waiting till like things are on the brink of divorce to have these conversations, they're going to be heated and probably much more aggressive than they need to be. But if you're having that up front, me in the situation that you described, I say, yeah, I realize I also have that expensive hobby. And then I can say, what if we both cut ours down by half or something? Like, you got to make those trade-offs. I think that's what that conversation allows you to have.
Right. Or if, you know, there are choices to be made. What if you have three hobbies and they're not all feasible once you combine your household? Maybe it's a scenario where you and your wife decide we each have X dollars per month to spend on our extras, our hobbies. Spend it how you choose. Maybe one of you goes shopping with the money. Great. Maybe the other one of you, you know, invests in baseball cards. Who cares, as long as you know upfront how that is going to be managed?
Yeah, I think that approach of having just separate money that's each other's is a great one. That's what my wife and I do. And like a couple months ago, my wife had her money saved up and used it to go get her skis tuned and cleaned. I don't ski, so like that's not an expense I would ever think of like us budgeting for, but she's able to spend that money without question from me. And I just recently bought an e-bike with no questions, because like that's where that balance comes in. And I mean, there was more than I did have to ask her, like, and have a conversation, of course, because those are larger expenses. But the things that it makes it very nice when you just have money that's yours. It does allow you a little bit more flexibility and freedom.
Absolutely. I think where the tricky part sometimes comes in is if one spouse makes a lot more money than mm-hmm. the other one, then the question comes up, well, should our spending money be the same for each of us? Should it be in proportion to how much we make? That's where it can get a little bit complicated. But again, if you can agree ahead of time and come to, you know, one mind of it, that's really helpful. But I do tell people, I want you to remember that no decision you make today is permanent. So you might decide as a couple, we're going to keep our money separate once we join households. And 6 months into it, you might decide that that's really not working well for you and you want to adjust it. It's all adjustable given whatever your circumstances are.
Yeah, there's always going to be some option that you can open up to. And that's something that happened with my wife and I when we were a couple months before getting married. I had brought up this conversation, and it was really important for her to still have an account that was, we were going to join everything and like everything was going to move in that direction. But at the beginning, it was important for her to have like her own credit card and her own account just for her own, protection or mind sake. But now like that's not even a thing that really gets used. Like it's all merged more into one. So like those things can progress. So if you're someone who really wants to have everything combined and the other spouse doesn't, like things can change. Maybe you'll open up more to seeing the pros of having things separate. So be open to both sides of that conversation is something that I would add. But what if you are going through a divorce? How do you navigate managing your own money and your joint financial responsibilities during a divorce?
That can be really, really difficult, because if you're headed towards divorce, you are probably splitting your household. Now you have, you know, two sets of rent or mortgage to pay, right? Because you're not paying those together. It gets really expensive, and you probably still have the same amount of income that you always had before. And of course, if you're going through a divorce, you're probably not agreeing about a lot of things. The best way to manage it is by coming to some sort of agreement about who pays for what. The problem that I see in divorces is that the couple might make an agreement about who's paying for what, and then someone doesn't keep up with their responsibility. So if you are going through a divorce, I do recommend going in front of the divorce court and getting what they call temporary orders, which means the judge is signing off on a court order that states who's paying for what. That way, if someone doesn't uphold what they've committed to, there's at least some recourse and there's someone sort of overseeing that process.
Yeah. And I can see that being helpful because it maybe, I'm sure it feels a little bit weird, especially if you're in a marriage, to say, oh, let's go get some sort of legal binding document that requires us to do stuff with our money. But when you're going through something as hard or as challenging as a divorce, that could be super beneficial towards keeping both of you accountable and having that like safety net a little bit, so to speak.
Well, it's certainly protection for the person in the lesser financial position. So when I'm working with the spouse who has maybe been the stay-at-home parent who doesn't have income of their own and is relying on the other spouse to pay the mortgage every month, to pay an amount of child support, to keep groceries coming into the household and things like that, they're in a very vulnerable position. And so I'm telling them, this is for your protection to get these temporary orders in place. However, for the person who will be making that mortgage payment and will be paying the child support while the divorce is going on, it really is for their protection as well, because it is stating very specifically what they're responsible for. So there can't be any misunderstandings.
Yeah, it's setting expectations on both sides. So then later down the road, the one party isn't saying, oh, you owe me way more because it was just wasn't what we expected. Like it sets clear expectations. I think it can take a lot of, I would almost say a little bit of the stress out of it, because it takes some of that off your back to figure out later.
Certainly.
But I don't think anyone plans going into a marriage to get a divorce. I don't think they want to plan things around getting a divorce, plan their finances around it. Do you have any tips or things that you feel that couples can do while they're married financially to help them prevent a divorce?
I've already mentioned that communication is so important. Of course, I think that everyone needs to be upfront about the finances and not be hiding money, you know, engaging in secret spending, engaging in things like secret gambling affairs, drugs, expensive things like that. All of that sort of stuff, I think, is pretty obvious. But if we go back to the regular check-ins that I suggest, it helps keep things transparent. It helps so that problems can't build up, because I think that's where I see a lot of problems is, yeah, everyone has disagreements about money, but if you can tackle them early before they can blow up into a bigger thing, you have a lot greater chance of resolving that successfully. I also think that staying on top of your budget can really help prevent some of the money issues that are typical in divorce situations, right? Money is one of the biggest stressors in a relationship. And so when you think about why does divorce happen, a lot of times there are money issues. And so staying on top of that budget and being mindful of where your spending is can help head off some problems. Now, I'm going to give one piece of advice. I don't want you to jump on me until I finish my thought. I do like the idea of each spouse having money of their own, an account of their own, a bank account and a credit card account. Okay. In some scenarios, the spouse is going to have a secret account of their own. That I'm not for, but I am for each person having a separate account where they can have their own money and have autonomy over that money.
Yeah. I like that a lot, because, well, one of the things that's a concern for my wife is she's like, how do I surprise you with like, how do I like get you stuff if everything's combined and you see it all? Like, that's a perfect scenario where having that separate thing just allows for those things to happen. My wife can feel like she'll keep, when we were first married, she would keep her credit card on her in case there was an emergency, because she knew that she would always have access to that because it was hers. So I think I like that idea a lot, having separate accounts that are separate but not secret. And that allows you to have a little bit of your own peace of mind, that you still have like some of your own financial control, is what I would say about that.
Yeah. When I talk about separate accounts, people sometimes automatically think I'm meaning secret accounts, and I really don't mean secret accounts, but I think it's really important for each spouse to have some money of their own. It is especially important for the spouse who might be a stay-at-home parent who doesn't have an income stream of their own, because I think that they need to feel some level of autonomy with the money and not always feel like they are under the thumb of the spouse who is working outside of the home. And so that can be really important from a self-esteem standpoint and just that feeling of autonomy to some level.
Yeah, this has really been super valuable, especially my wife and I right now. She's in PA school, so I'm the only one working. So we're in a situation where I'm making all the money and she's just going to school. She'll describe it as I make all the money, she spends all the money. But once she graduates from PA school, it's absolutely going to flip-flop, where as a physician assistant, she's going to make way more than me than I really ever could in my career in marketing. But she's going to have a much higher ceiling and a much higher initial pay. So I think what you're describing really helps us to set up as well, like that good foundation to have those conversations. Cause I think those regular check-ins are especially important, because we will have, like you said, regular, just 5 to 10 minute conversations about money. How do we feel like we're doing right now? And then once a month, we have our budget meetings on the last Sunday of the month, where we'll talk about our budget for the next month. And I think they've gotten much faster as we've done them over the years, and they get a lot easier, is what I would say to someone who's maybe scared or afraid to start something like that, is just start simple and start slow, and then they'll get easier and better as you go along. But yeah, this has been a super helpful conversation for me. I think my main takeaway is just communication. What would you say, like, your main takeaway is about all this?
Communication and transparency.
Yeah, that's what I would say is absolutely essential. You just got to keep things open and honest is a good way to go. Well, yes. I think that's going to do it for this episode. Tracy, is there anything else you wanted to add, or where can people find you, or how can they get in touch with you?
People can find me at my website, fraudcoach.com, because I call myself the fraud coach 3-year divorce. And when they get to the fraud coach, they can check out the divorce money guide, which helps you sort out your finances if you are in the process of divorce.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that's a super good URL. I'm surprised you were able to get a URL of fraud coach. That sounds like something would have been bought like that a long time ago. So
cool. Oh, I think I bought it about 15 years ago.
Yeah, there you go. Cause anytime I try to look for like moneytalk.com, they want like $1 million. So I'm kind of jealous of you having a good URL like that, but that's a different conversation. Thank you for joining us. I had a ton of fun talking about this, and I always say these interviews feel kind of selfish on my part, cause I get to learn so much from a bunch of great minds. So thanks for joining. Of course, all the links and stuff to find Tracy will be in the show notes, and you can reach her there on her website. Thanks, Tracy, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you found that interview really helpful, and I think it's going to help a lot of people out there, whether you're going through money struggles right now in a marriage or in a relationship, or looking forward to the future of potentially having a long-term relationship. This episode can provide you with some great things to do, or some great things to look forward to and make sure to do in the future. Like I mentioned, you can make sure to find Tracy's information in the show notes or at fraudcoach.com. So that's going to do it for today's episode. Make sure you go out and have a money talk with someone about this episode. How can you prevent against financial fights or a divorce? And how do you take care of your money during a divorce? Let me know in the comments on Spotify or by reaching out to me on social media. And of course, you can always email me with any questions you have. I'd love to cover them on the episode. Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk. The Money Talk show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and should not be used for personal or specific financial advice. Every situation is unique and different. Please make sure to do your own research for your personal financial situation.